I talked this before. We get in the habit of being clever and making really clever phrases and clever words. I don't want to say it's the people want to sound smart, but want to be convincing and make sure we're using the right terms or something. There's a time for that. There's a time you have to use the right language for the right audience to be very specific, the right terminology. You know, do you need to say it facilitates or it does? Do you have to use a big word that's got three syllables, or can you get the same message across with one syllable word? You know, I don't want to say keep it simple, stupid. Keep it simple, silly. I've actually seen in language one time the word bifurcate used. I knew what the word was because I'd heard it years ago. I had to look it up. I'm like, make it easy for me to understand it. If I have to dig into it or get a dictionary, I was like, what's the word here? Oh, well, don't waste your time.
All right. Hello, hello, and welcome back to Product Marketing Life. I'm your host, Sid Catan. I'm a senior product marketing manager at Lumaps, and I'm really excited to be here today with Doug Kimball, senior director of product marketing at Digital Science. Doug, welcome.
Hey, Sid, I'm just happy to be here. I mean, I love talking about product marketing, so this will be a lot of fun.
Yes, and let's start by talking a little bit more about you. I'd love to just understand more about yourself. What do you like to do for fun?
Yeah, sure. I mean, what I like to do for fun is relax when I get a chance to. But I think we talked about one of my hobbies is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And the only reason I bring it up is that it's kind of become a foundation of what I do from a mindset standpoint, from a teaching standpoint, from a helping make other people better standpoint, which is, in my mind, part of the reason for this podcast is how can I bring in my knowledge and skills and experience to help other product marketers out. But yeah, I've been doing Jiu-Jitsu for, I think it's coming up in 19 years. Teaching for about 15 or 16 of those. So it's a lot of fun.
Oh, you teach as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been teaching since I was an early blue belt. So I've gotten better at teaching. As you first start, you think you know what you're doing. But again, going back to life lesson, teaching something repeatedly, you're teaching it over and over and over. You become a lot better at what it is that you do, as well as a lot better about how to explain what it is that you do.
Oh yeah, 100%. Jiu-Jitsu is the one thing that I tried to learn, and I decided definitely not to teach. But maybe I got to take a class with you or something. I don't know.
It's fun. It's fun. We call it human chess, and what's kind of fun is that my company just had our company retreat 2 weeks ago in Barcelona. I guess it's 3 weeks now, and they offered the chance to teach basically on sessions, as they called them. And so I said, let's teach a human chess Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu intro class. And they put it on there as a morning workout session. So I got to teach, we had 18 people, I think, there, their first intro to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu on a hard tile floor, which was far from ideal, but it worked.
At a company retreat, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
it was fun. Did you like flip some people and like, you know?
No. I fortunately had a guy that was he's trained for me 10 years, and we experimented a couple of things like with some minor sweeps. I'm like, no, this is hard floor. I mean, so we kept it pretty basic and safe because, conking somebody's noggin would not be a good thing.
Yeah, that's the retreat where that happened kind of thing. Okay. Yeah,
exactly.
That's awesome. That's really cool. And I like that. The mindset takes with you, the coaching mentality you take with you. Let's talk a little bit about your career and, you know, your journey into product marketing. I say this all the time at this point, I should come up with something new, but I feel like everyone has a stumbled into product marketing moment. You know, it's like just hits you. Can you walk me through your journey? What was your experience like?
And I made a transition from my master's degree is actually in counseling. So I was a professional counselor for 7 years before I transitioned over to technology and business, which some days I wonder what happened to my brain. But it was funny as I was thinking through this, I've been doing product marketing in some fashion for close to 25 years, thinking back to stuff I was doing before I realized it was product marketing. But my first, I guess, real official version of product marketing was at the Nielsen company. We had a solution that I was the product manager for, and the solution was called Answers, because I gave answers to questions, and helped to be the product manager to bring it to fruition. Then they said, hey, we want you to be the product marketer for this. I'm like, okay, cool. What's product marketing? I had to look it up, and back then there weren't anywhere near the amount of resources to talk about product marketing as there are now, which I was a little jealous of. But as I looked into what product marketing is, I'm like, I like this because it gives me that connection to the product, and I understand that. It gives me a connection to the audience, which is the customers and the clients, which I like. And it gives me an opportunity to do storytelling. I'm like, okay, I dig that. So that's kind of how I got into it. My title was Director, Answers, which does not say product marketing, but so officially, that's been a while.
I love that. There needs to be more PMMs with just Director, Answers, because that's what we have to provide, right?
Yeah.
How did you make the break into product management?
I guess by making a good name for myself. So I came back to the Nielsen company. I ran the Midwest professional services team for 2 years. Had very good luck doing that. They had good success with the teams, and they liked my style of working very closely with customers and understanding what it is we're trying to solve for, understanding the product, understanding how we spoke to the value. And they said this, you know, because it was our first ever SaaS initiative before it was even called SaaS. And they said, we want you to spearhead this, because I was pretty good at building relationships across teams. So working with R&D, working with sales, working with the people who were around the client side, and just kind of got plopped into it, to be honest. And it went generally pretty well. I mean, I made more than one mistake along the journey, maybe 50, but it was fun. But that's why I think it added value to me as a product marketer overall, is I understand the product management side. I've done it twice. I understand the sales side. I've been a salesperson, and obviously I've been in marketing for quite a long time. So really knowing those audiences has made a difference.
Wow. So it was like counseling to sales to product management to product marketing, right?
Yeah. Completely valid, intelligent path, right?
I love it. I love it. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, when you say it out loud, it actually makes a lot of sense. That's really cool. So you were there at Nielsen. What happened next? How did you, what was kind of the career progression, some of the steps you took along the way?
Yeah, once I kind of, I guess, got the product marketing piece down pretty well, they said, I want you to become the salesperson, because I, you know, nobody knew it really better than I did, because I took it from the beginning to the end. So they said, we want you to go be a salesperson. And I always say I was a good salesperson. I wasn't a great salesperson. I called on every single retailer in North America, probably 3/4 of the manufacturers, you know, half the manufacturers on the Midwest side, because I knew this best, but I was not a great salesperson. So I was good at telling the story and getting people interested, but that whole like move forward, you want to buy, you want to extend this, you want to add this module, just wasn't my nature. But they said, thank you, but bye was the short version of that one. So I was a salesperson for, I don't know, almost 2 years before. And Nielsen was going through a bunch of cuts. So it wasn't just that, but they'd gone through the whole, they brought a new person in from GE, and they started to downsize, and bye-bye.
Sure. Okay. So you kind of ping-pong back to sales. What happened after that?
Yeah, got back into sales at a supply chain company. And the first 6 months, I kept asking all these questions like, we're doing this with marketing. We're doing this with marketing. And why are we doing this, this, and this? And finally, just to shut me up, they said, why don't you take charge of marketing? I'm like, okay. So went from sales after, it was probably 6 months, into running the marketing team. It was a global supply chain company. And that's one of the my marketing journey really, really took off, was having to not just be product marketing, but to be full-scale marketing, demand gen, all the different aspects of that. And again, putting it in a global mindset really makes you think about messaging and positioning and individual, you know, ways you talk to people. Really, really important. So did that for a couple of years. Grew the team there. They went through a downside. Went over to JDA, which is now Blue Yonder, the largest supply chain company. I think that's where my product marketing journey really kicked off, because that is where I came in officially as a product marketer and had a really, really great product marketing mentor that made me significantly better. And honestly, that's where my journey really took off.
Really interesting. So like marketing at a supply chain company, I'm guessing not necessarily a huge emphasis on marketing, and you kind of have to bring people along, or what was it like?
There was, because... And especially in the case that we were in, the company I was with was a Brazilian company, had bought into a North American supply chain firm. So we were trying to get some market awareness going in North America of what it was we were doing, trying to do the differentiation, trying to separate Brazilian language and Brazilian marketing styles from American marketing styles. They're very different. So a lot of it really was that whole, who are you and how do we create that awareness and how do we create enough of a hook that once you learn who we are, we create a differentiation story. So you go, okay, cool. There's other supply chain providers out there, but you have a hook that makes more difference. That's what a lot of the effort was around. I mean, demand generation was pretty consistent across most of the companies I've been with, but the learning how to tell a story in a way that somebody goes, okay, cool. I want to go from yeah, you're interesting to let's talk further.
Very cool. So you've seen a thing or two. From there, then you are now at senior PMM director at Digital Science. Was there anything else in between that I missed?
No, yeah, I was a vice VP of industry and solutions marketing, call it product marketing. We couldn't say at the time, but yes, I ran a global team of industry marketers, solution marketers, analyst relations, sales effectiveness. What else was in there? I said analyst relations. A pretty broad product marketing and more team for a company called Stiebel Systems. Did that. They're based in Denmark. Did that for 4 years. A lot of different things. Everything from being an event marketing person to being a thought leadership person, being up on stage and telling the story of what it is that we do, and running partner marketing events. Just had my hands in a lot of different things. It was honestly probably the most fun I've ever had. Because I get to do things I never thought I would. It was just a really, really neat time in my life. Got to mentor a lot more product marketers and sharpen my product marketing skills. Went from there to a company called Ontitex, which is a graph technology company, very, very complex. Came in as their chief marketing officer to really help growth with North America and overall in the global piece. So running a team of, I think, 11 at one point, including bringing in a product marketer because we didn't have product marketing. And it's hard to be a CMO and a product marketer successfully. I've had a heck of a run, to be honest.
That's legendary. A lot of cool different roles. And like you said, you got to wear a lot of different hats, it seems like. So that's awesome. So now you're at Digital Science, if I remember correctly, not too long.
Yeah, mid-August is when I joined last year.
Okay. So yeah, what did you get brought in for? And then what are you up to now on the team?
Two main things is to bring my depth of product marketing experience and knowledge and processes and frameworks and all that sort of thing into the company, because they didn't have that. They had a bunch of little individual product marketing activities going on and no consistency, no frameworks. And I'm not trying to be negative. It's just because the company had gone through a bunch of mergers and acquisitions and growth, they were just figuring out how to get there. And the other part of that was, because I've done a lot with team development and team building very successfully, is to create a team of product marketers. We had a bunch of individual ones, as I said, that were doing good stuff in their own little worlds, but there was product marketers that hadn't talked to each other in the entire time they've been there across other segments. We've got 5 segments we deal with. And so a lot of what I've been doing for the first few months is just making a true team and putting frameworks in place and processes in place to improve our go-to-market or go-to-our launch activities, our messaging, all those things. Now I'm starting to slow down a bit in order to speed up on other things, like win-loss programs, improving what we do there, competitive intelligence. I want to kickstart an analyst relations program. So it was really just, hey, this guy knows product marketing really well. That's what they need. And they brought me in for those two things.
Very cool. It sounds like you're have your hands full, or you just have a lot of time on your hands. Cause from what I understand, you wrote a book, right?
I did write a book and I hadn't, and that was actually during an unemployment time. And the process behind that was people kept asking me, what messaging framework do you use when you put messaging together? And I referenced one that, a former boss had hammered into my head, quite unsubtly. And so one day I kept thinking about the framework I keep talking about. Like, I'm going to write a book. So I actually got it here. I'll just do the whole brief plug.
Yeah, nice.
It shows up. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. And I opened up my box. I'm like, hey, look, that's my book. I wrote the book more really just because I wanted to. It gave me an opportunity. So I was doing some fractional consulting at the time. And, some of my goals are to do more consulting at some point, do more speaking engagements, more workshops, help other product marketers improve what they do, because that's just a big passion I have is mentoring. So, you know, my hope is that if at least one product marketer buys a book, reads it, and goes, this helped me to do XYZ better, then I'm going to feel good. And when I make my millions off of the Hollywood rights to the book, I'll feel even better.
Exactly. Okay. So this happened before, and now you're in the role and stuff like that. Yeah. I love the story you told me a little bit about behind the book as well. And like you said, your manager hammered this into you. Can you share a little bit more of that backstory?
Yeah, I've told the story 20 times. It's fun, but it's so just a quick background. When I came in as a product marketer at Blue Yonder, we had a competitor that kept basically, they were smaller than us. They were more nimble. They kept stealing our lunch when it comes to the area we were selling in, manufacturing planning. And so I was tasked with creating a competitive killer kit to use for sales to combat that. And so I put together this, you know, I thought beautiful presentation deck, and I felt really good about it. And I'm presenting it to my manager. And I'm probably on slide, I don't know, 5 or 6 when he goes, Doug, stop. I'm like, okay. He goes, this sucks. I'm like, that's subtle. Because this, you know, you're not going to make any luck, any friends here. You're not going to make sales happy. This is not going to work. And I'm like, you know, and I'm still pretty newer to product marketing overall. And I was pretty excited about this. I want to make the guy happy. And he's like, okay, I want you to take out a post-it note. And I want you to write down these words. Okay. So what, why, and who cares? And so I actually still have the post-it note. I've had it for going on 15 years. Is I want you to go through everything that you're saying in this presentation. And basically, this phrasing, well, you know, run it through the filter. So if you say, you know, we do this better than this competitor, you know, blah, blah, blah. So what? What does that mean when you talk with this feature or this functionality? What's the value behind that? And the challenge that why is that important? Why is this going to make somebody want to respond differently? And then who cares? Who, you know, who are we targeting? Who is this going to have the most impact for? And, you know, some of this is stuff he told me, some of this stuff is just, I kind of built into my own style of things. I mean, he kicked it off and, you know, he would reinforce it, but I've built my own version of that ever since then, where I may not actually tell myself, so what, why, who cares? I may not actually challenge my team and say, so what, why, who cares? But I build that into, here's the messaging you're saying, and then challenge it. So that's where the framework initially came from. And again, I've kept that note because it's something I challenge myself with, I challenge my teams with, I challenge my strategic thinking with, is, you know, I want to do X and Y. So what? So that's how it came about.
I love it. Yeah, I think it's a good one. And I think, you know, in this world with AI and everything, that should just be one of the markdown files people add, because, yeah, like we get all these like long drawn out essays from AI that like, yeah, they usually don't answer those questions. Yep. Or they do, and it's like, it's this and not this. And it's always the same exact
if then, if then, yeah. And, you know, I talked this before, it's, you know, we get in the habit of being clever and making really clever phrases and clever words. And, you know, I don't want to say it's the people want to sound smart, but want to be convincing and make sure we're using the right terms or something, which is, there's a time for that. There's a time you have to use the right language for the right audience to be very specific with the right terminology. But, you know, do you need to say it facilitates or it does? You know, do you have to use a big word that's got 3 syllables, or can you get the same message across with 1-syllable word? You know, I don't want to say keep it simple, stupid. Keep it simple, silly. You know, make it easy for me to understand it. If I have to dig into it or get a dictionary, I was like, what's the word here? Well, don't waste your time. I've seen in language one time the word bifurcate used in a market and external marketing faces for marketing faces message. Like I knew what the word was because I'd heard it years ago. I had to look it up. I'm like, why would you say bifurcate? And that's just look how smart I am.
Yeah, that's really making someone think. And then it sounds like in this case, like literally flipping through the dictionary, which you don't want.
I don't want to do that.
That will probably pause from me booking the meeting right then and there. Yep. Right. I like that a lot. So yeah, we were nerding out about this on our last call, but like, yeah, like how does this show up in the work you do? You mentioned, you know, for sure, less brain dumps and up, you know, leveling up your team. Might not necessarily say the words, but it's like ingrained into how you think. Yeah. What does that look like? How does it manifest?
I think it's just that challenging. And I didn't really realize that I don't always use the framework words. Until I was actually interviewing one of my former coworkers for the book. I just getting some feedback from him. And he's like, Doug, you never really hammered the messaging framework into us. We just learned to expect how you would challenge us using it. Like, that's kind of cool. But I'll use it for everything from, I mean, messaging is the obvious one. That's the easy one that it makes sense because that's the most common external one. But website language, presentations. I'm a demon when it comes to presentations being made more simple, more clear, more concise. Do you need 50 slides if you could do it in 5? Do you need any slides at all? Can you go up there and tell a story? And again, if you have the experience of using that framework to pressure test your messaging and your story, can you just get up there and draw on a whiteboard and tell a story that way and forget the slides? But I talk a lot about that in the book on, you know, whether that's challenging visuals that you're using, challenging phrases that you're using. Do you need 19 bullets in the slide? Please say no. Can you do it in 3 bullets? And if you can't, then why? And that's, you know, that's why the why comes in, is why is that particular 5th bullet so important? Is it important to me or is it important to you, the prospect? And so that's what I really just focus on, is using it to challenge people to think about what is it I want them to take away as the core message? Why is that going to resonate with them? Why is it going to make them go from the, okay, I'm nodding my head, to the, I'm going to click that CTA. I want to talk to you further. And, you know, the who cares if I say, well, if I don't do this, I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to be behind in a competitive standpoint, or I'm not going to be able to get the finance I'm looking for. Put enough urgency into it and relevancy so they feel like, I got to do something soon. And that could be slide decks, messaging, collateral, all those things.
I love it. Yeah, something that I've tried to, I mean, it's a little slightly different, but maybe similar. It's also why now, right? Like you said, There needs to be some urgency of like, you know, there's problems that have been out there forever. Why does it matter now? Why do we need to solve this thing now? We've lived with this itch forever. Yeah. So I really like that one. Where is I going to take this? So I really like the way you're thinking about it. And like, how do you, however, manage the succinctness when you need to, let's say, and I'm just, an example that's been in my mind is like, you give, you know, your champion a pitch deck that they have to go present to their leadership. How do you do it when you're not in the room? How do you make sure they have a good enough story, even if it's not all on the bullets?
Yeah, no, that's a tough one. And one of the things I've learned is, like, I've done a lot of executive messaging in my time, and it's generally better to brain dump first, just get it all out there. Here's what I want to tell Sid, you know, hey, boss, write it all out there. Look at it. Okay, cool. What word can I take out? What sentence can I take out? Can I condense these sort of things? Can I streamline that? So, instead of having 3 paragraphs, I've got 1 paragraph. Or I've got, here's the high level, and you want the more detail, it's down here. That has served me very, very well as far as executive communication and others I've taught the same flow to, is just strip out what you don't really, really need. But it's hard. It's kind of like brainstorming. You can't put a throttle on brainstorming. Just dump your brain out there, right. Then go back and trim and clean up. And I've found that to be just a clean way to get to that as far as a flow. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah. I think that's a good point that, like, you know, you can always have what's on the side, and then all the detail can be anywhere else, speaker notes, wherever, if it needs to go that far. But You're right. Like, at the end of the day, you know, simplicity wins, and if you can communicate something with less, then it's always good.
And the same goes back to, you know, you asked about presentations and slide decks and how do you feed that to the field if you're not in the room. Yeah, and having them present to you is a very awkward, and sales teams hate that. And present to marketing, why should I do that? I just ask them, why not? You know, to your point, why not and why now? It makes everything better. So if you don't go through, because I had this with my current company. I was brought over for a workshop in London with one of the sales teams. They put a couple of the slides up there. I'm like, good God, what is all these words? I said, why do we? We might have somebody in the room who wants to have that one particular point answered. I said, okay, I understand that. But my mindset is, if 90% of the room is likely to not care about that one piece in there, take it out, move it to another slide, move it to the backup slides, and focus on what the majority of your audience is going to be interested in. if even that one annoying person that goes, well, what about the left-handed screw on this one? There you go. Answer that question. Shut up. Go back to your work.
That's a good point. Like that for the audience, you have to focus on the main points because that's what they're going to take away at the end of the day, not the sideshow left-handed screw. I love that. Never heard that before.
Yeah. There's always that one person that's going to say, I got to be smarter than you. I'm like, okay, you're smarter than me. That's fine. But
I know we were also talking about like you mentioned the whiteboard thing. Like, is there any examples out there anywhere you draw inspiration from as well when it comes to applying this framework?
Yeah, the whiteboard thing is, you know, I've done twice at different companies. It's funny. I actually ran into them again at one of the PMA events. And I actually showed them from my book. I'm like, look, I used you guys in my book. It's a great way, again, to use, like I'm talking about the visual storytelling, no deck, just walk up to a whiteboard and say, here's what we see most organizations struggling with. They're trying to bring their data together. We're trying to do these things. They're challenged by that. You do this visual story and you get people going, yeah, that's my pain. And then you walk through how you can get to a better result for the problem or for the company or for the person you're talking to. They start nodding their head. At no point you talk about your product or your technology or anything like that. You're just giving them, this is the world we think you're dealing with. And again, you've gone through and you've challenged that whole process with the so what and the why and the who cares, so that it has more impact. And when you're done, you feel like, this is what we do, and this is how we can help, you know, Sid in your situation. We can solve for you that. And then people don't feel like they're being sold to. They're being told a story. And I've had it happen where as you're telling that story, go, no, we use this database here, and they draw on there. Or, no, you forgot to add this in there. You're like, okay, awesome. Thank you. Because they just queued you up, and they've answered more of your so what and the why. You know, well, this is really important to our body. You know, like, who cares? And you draw that on the whiteboard. I mean, when they start kicking in, it's just gold. And I've had some success with it, not as much as we would have liked, because the second time we rolled it out, we rolled it out as COVID hit. So we went from a planning to do it in person. We had to do it all virtual as a split. That was a mess. But I mean, the concept was really, really good. It's just the world shifted.
Yeah. Have you had to do it virtually, like using a virtual tool?
Yeah. When we first made that, we literally shifted what we did in a month and a half, which was nuts. And I give the organization and the partner credit for that. The tools didn't exist as well as they do now for drawing on a virtual whiteboard back then. So we were literally having people put a whiteboard behind them and look over here. And like, that was, you know, this is, you know, mid 2020 when there's just, it wasn't the same now. Now I could be very comfortable. Oh yeah, no problem. But yeah, we had people that would just take whiteboards and just draw them.
You know, I just realized I did that. It sounded so crazy, but I used to have a small whiteboard and I would like draw stuff out and be like, hey guys, look at this.
Yeah.
Wow. I was one of those also.
Yeah. You're one of those people, which is good. I mean, you adapted, but you think about it too, from an audience perspective. If I get up there and I'm drawing on this whiteboard and tell my story as I go, I'm not stuck behind this. I'm not stuck behind my screen going, so Sid, here's what I'm telling you about, you know, blip, 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 blip. You know, I'm up here. I'm up there showing my confidence in my product and my solution and my story with no speaker notes. I'm just telling you. And, you know, if people are talking to you confidently, you're more likely to say, I'm interested in hearing more. And again, that's where I think the framework comes into place, is that if you've challenged it, that there's no chinks in the armor, then you tell a more compelling story.
Yeah. I really liked how you started too. You were saying, you know, map out their flow, map out what their business looks like. And then once you have alignment on that, you agree on the reality of the situation, it's very easy to introduce your solution. Yep. And like you said, your story. So very cool. Doug, this has been awesome. I think we covered a lot of your career. I love the book, and I think, or the thesis behind the book. I haven't read the book yet. But I just think it's a really cool story, and definitely something new here. It reminds me of like the five whys as well. I think I'm putting that together because of the product management hat you had. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of dots connecting.
There's a lot of similarities. It just makes you challenge. And I first learned the five whys. It's an annoying exercise, but it works really, really well.
Yeah. Like it's a tough one. Like sometimes I find myself going down and then I'm like, wait, this why actually brought me back up, not towards the root cause. And I have to like rethink how I really, it's a fun exercise. It seems like one of those things where it's like, okay, I apply the theory, it's good, but it's actually a, it's a tough one. It's a mind buster.
No, I agree.
Awesome. Well, yeah, Doug, I always ask all of our guests two final questions.
Okay.
The first one is, product marketing is blank. Can you fill in the blank?
Multifaceted. How about that?
Okay.
Because, you know, it's rare, I think, that any product marketer will do the same thing each day, every day for a week. There are so many things we can get into from a strategic standpoint, from a tactical standpoint, areas we can influence when it comes to sales and product and market insights, all those different things. I mean, it's a good product marketer should be multifaceted.
I love it. I was asked to give a presentation in a few months to the school I graduated from. And I'm going to have to talk about and answer this question. So I'm just taking notes now. This is a good one. It's multifaceted. Awesome. Well, yeah. Last question is just, Doug, how can people learn more about you? Where can they find your book? Yeah. See what you're up to.
It's on Amazon. That's the easiest. Go to Amazon and just type in So What, Why, Who Cares, and it should pop up. Or you can go to sowhatwhywhocares.com. That's my website that has, I got some thought leadership on there and some templates, other things there that I'm just trying to continually add to for a resource. And definitely always connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to be on LinkedIn, linkedin.com, Doug Kimball. That's pretty complex. I like being part of the community where I can help to share back. So I don't want to connect just to sell my book. I want to connect to help.
Love it. Well, yeah, Doug, I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Well, thank you.
Looking forward to staying in touch. Yeah,
definitely. It's been fun. Thanks, and I appreciate it.